The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 30th of September, 2019. On the podcast today, I have James Draper, CEO of Bidstack, BIDS ticker, and James discusses their interim results, recent news, and upcoming milestones. Also on the podcast, David Ciclatera, Chairman Live Company Group, describes the ongoing progress being made at the company as they release their interim results today. Plus, Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Petroleum, SAVP, and Andrew outlines the highlights within their half-year results and talks about what's to come for the rest of the year. Also, Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals, EUZ, explains what the £1 million they've raised today will be used for. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, if you receive an RNS via our app, which is free to download, go to your favourite app store, download it for free, and you received an RNS and you like the content of that, hit the thumbs up button and it will feature on the podcast and also on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Draper, CEO of Bidstack, BIDS ticker. James, thanks for joining me.
Absolute pleasure, Justin, as always.
Now, I'm going to sort of skip the intro. I mean, people know about Bidstack. You are one of the most followed companies, one of the most exciting companies, I think, around for a long time on AIM. And hence why the share price has done fantastically since your IPO. It's gone like from, it dropped about 5 pence, just below that, and it's got 40 pence. It's come back of late. We've had the interims out. You've had some exciting news coming out. But first of all, let's get the interims and what people are talking about. You said all along, you know, that revenue is back-end loaded, pretty much. It's not going to feature too much in this first half. I think people are still sort of shocked as the revenue as it is, and people are saying, okay, does that mean now the target they had is gone completely, and people are starting to worry? So first and foremost, take us through, Jim, because I said, you know, on my weekend video, I said they hadn't plugged in all this seamless scalability, hasn't been plugged in yet. Now it sort of is. Going forward, it's looking good, I think, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely looking good. So yes, it's, I understand there'll be some people who are comparing the end of year number to what we did in Q4 through to what we've done in the first half of this year. So I'll try and give a bit of sort of, put a bit of meat in the bones, sort of talk people through what we've been up to, and then where we sort of, and why we're extremely calm about everything here. So end of last year, the deal which we put together was like an exclusivity arrangement. It was run programmatically. It was run via API because it was a brand direct deal. It didn't require the same level of targeting that a global agency group would require. For that, you would require these guys need what is basically called a sort of a verification pixel, a tracking pixel as well, like dropped into a gaming environment via an SDK. To basically sort of go, well, obviously, as mentioned, as we're building out this new ad category, people want to understand how to report on it, to be able to go, was that campaign successful? Was that campaign not successful? So to be able to do that accurately, first things first, I want to know, right, how many eyeballs did this bit of copy actually reach? We're obviously incentivized along with the game publishers to say as high a number as possible, because we get paid on a cost per thousand impressions each time the advert plays. But if you go even back from that point, you go, there is no manual to say what an impression is in a football game environment, a stadium-based game environment, a track-based game environment, or an open-world-based environment. So yes, you can chuck in a verification pixel, but still you need to tell these guys what they should be looking for and what they should be reporting on, which requires buy-in from the likes of the advertising bodies like the IAB. You then need the viewability guys like IAS, like Moat, to understand what you're doing. So you go, right, this advert was definitely in view for, let's say, 2 seconds. That would be classed as viewable, for example. So we're having to define all these things bit by bit. So at the start of this year, I remember I came on and I sort of said, right, the first half of this year, and where we basically took the target number at the end of the year, worked back. So we were looking at it and going, right, what do we need to do to get to that number? And we need to get to that number, not just a case of just satisfying aim and getting people just hitting a number in a sort of a roundabout sort of Frankenstein way. We want to do it in a frictionless way that's going to grow forward from there. So the only way to do it is to tackle the ad category piece, make sure the SDK is fully operational, and it's got to be said that putting an SDK in which has got a verification pixel in it into a gaming environment in a console environment or PC high fidelity environment has never been done before. So there's the trust of the studios which have to run through. There's their testing procedures they have to run through. Then there's the case of getting the buy-in from the buy side, from the likes of the trade desk, from at Nexus, from this. We're very lucky, and I'm going to say that the more sort of boutique-y ad networks, the DSPs, the likes of Platform 161 and Avocet, they were happy to lean in for like a market differentiator. But to attract the likes of the trade desk and AppNexus, you need to make sure you've got what looks like incoming large amounts of revenue that's going to make the integration process, which takes a fair old while, we're not talking weeks here, we're talking far longer, they want to see that revenue is definitely going to come. Mm-hmm. So that's where we had to put in place in the first half of this year a number of test spends, tested pipes, and that was with very supportive friends over at Platform 161 and Avocet. That laid down the blueprint for how to make this programmatic. So we used those blueprints. We're talking to the trade desk and Xander at Nexus. So we ran through that particular phase, and at the same time, Lewis Sherlock joined in May. And what we didn't want to do is get in a crack sales guy in too early who would be sort of sitting on his hands whilst the technology simply wasn't ready. So we brought him in at a point where it was very early, but he had a few months for him to sort of just sort of bed in, get himself up to speed. And it's worth mentioning, Lewis has built out two ad categories before, and both have been overwhelmingly successful. He's one of the first guys in as well at Zaxis of Group M. So you imagine his connections there are remarkably strong as well. And we've basically been working through his plan that he pitched. I remember I told you ages ago that he came in, pitched this 40-page presentation, and he's working through that plan. And it's led to us to the point of what happened on Friday, which is the Denser Ages Network tie-up. Now, there's certain things that I can talk about when it comes to that. There are certain things I can't. And what I don't want to do is, on a results day, start talking about certain nuances of that deal, which might make investors very happy today, but actually will screw us all down the road because it loses the trust of Dentsu. However, I can say this, is that is the most significant bit of news that we've had since going up on AIM. It's what we've been working towards throughout the whole year. It's what we identified someone like Lewis as the person to go and get us a deal of this nature. And it's the deal of that nature which can easily get us to the point of all the targets which are out there. So it's now a case of, and I would say that the strategic partnership wording is probably the correct way of looking at it, because we are very close to those guys already. And there are a number of things that we are doing together, which are very exciting, that unlocks enormous advertising spend for us, and it unlocks some very interesting inventory for their clients. So we are very happy. We have not changed any number which is put out there. So it is with, what can I say? The first half of this year was remarkably strong from a an innovation point of view from our side. And it's worth mentioning as well, I put it in my statement, the likes of Stadia and xCloud, and we know there's other interesting cloud-based platforms out there. Some have been tested out in the wild, and some are very much embryonic. But that is a seismic shift in the market. We're very much aware of what was going on with that. We are, as you'd imagine, if people have read into the FM renewal, there are obviously certain things in there which point towards us having relationships with some of these guys. And that is significant. So we're building this out in the most logical way, working from the back end of the year backwards. And we've executed on a plan, and we are very, very comfortable.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And so now, I mean, you talked a lot of times about seamless scalability. Are you at that point now where you can sort of start executing that, or, you know?
In short, yes, we are. However, it's worth mentioning a few things. Look, I would say this. I haven't changed the number, right? And it's you imagine the board gets together before we put these results out. It was overwhelmingly, with all the evidence that we have on our side of the table, decided we are very, very comfortable. So with that in mind, the frictionless scalability, yes, the SDK is now fully operational. It is working. It has been tested in live environments. It's been beta tested with our friends over at Cody's. It's been tested with our friends over at Sports Interactive. I imagine there's also some other partners that we're not mentioning yet that we're also been fully testing it with to make sure that they are very comfortable with what we have in terms of a tech stack. So that's one side in terms of supply scalability, in terms of the giving the reporting metrics back. We've now been going through the process of the final stage of integration with AppNexus and the Trade Desk, and we've got Dentsu Aegis. So you imagine put our ad console in the middle, which is now fully operational, which I'm looking forward to being able to sort of share that to any investor who's got an interest in seeing it. Mm-hmm. And that is the whole flow from end to end, so from supply friction scalability to the demand side. The final pieces are the recognition of this as an ad category, and that is there's phases of where that gets rolled out, and you want to get to the point of where you would class like an open exchange programmatic buy. So that means that some person who's never heard about inventory can go on to the likes of the Trade Desk. And then basically be able to upload creative and just sort of immediately sort of go and buy like in that way. So it's like we would be in amongst all the other types of inventory out there. Now, at the moment we're doing PMP deals. It's a private marketplace. That's the way in which we operate at the moment. But open exchange is probably still, I'd say, 12 months away. Probably slightly less, maybe 9, but 12 months. We're saying that's realistic time frame. Once you get to that point, it literally is just the machine is just up and away, and we're all happy because it's just printing money. But it's a huge task which we're undertaking here, which is to basically sort of build out a net new ad category. But it's fair to say that what I've been delighted about all the way through this is that on the supply side, they've lent in and they have extreme interest in what we're doing and have worked very closely with us. And on the demand side, it's the same thing. There's huge amounts of interest from the advertising agencies that have a real sort of appetite for defining a new category in what is such a booming sector like gaming. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I mean, people are seeing, you know, that your share price has dropped, obviously, on the news of revenue. But as far as you're concerned, knowing what's happening, are you as excited as you always have been about it?
Yes, of course. You know, I've come on this since the end of Q2, H1. I've been on this, and did I sound depressed? No. It's everything is coming together as we were expecting. It's coming through in a really structured, orderly manner. We know what the end of year target is. We're very comfortable with the end of year target. The only way to get to that end of year target is to do a very structured process, which we're going through at the moment. Give Lewis the breathing space he needed, give him the tools that were required for us to go and get the job done from a technology point of view. And that's all there with the deal and tie-up with Dentsu. And bear in mind, that is just the first. We are very, 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 very comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's always hard to ask this question because obviously you can't really say a lot, but what are you hoping to tick off? What milestones are you hoping to achieve, James, in the next, say, 3-6 months? In fact, let's say before the end of the year, hopefully.
That is a good question. I would say, right, first things first, the Dentsu partnership fully integrates into what we're doing. The number hit, which is remarkably exciting. There are a number of partnerships on the supply side that I would love to be able to sort of tell one and all precisely what we're up to, but by the year's end, I'm sure I'll be able to talk to you in much more detail. There are a number of cloud gaming services, as mentioned, which are launching at the end of this year, and you can imagine that we've not been sitting on our hands here, so there are a number of things going on when it comes to that. So by the end of the year, we should be able to talk about some of the deeper relationships we've got with people that we've not been able to speak about until to date. So by the end of the year, there are revenue targets, obviously, which are in no way intimidating to us. There are, more interestingly from our side, it's the frictionless scalability targets we've got here, which is definition of ad category and things like that. So there's bits and pieces that we are operating through here, which set us up for the future. And we've got to look beyond just the end of year number, which we are very comfortable about, but you've got to look beyond that. There's no point in just rushing and just trying to hit a number just to, because we won't be thanked down the road, and it won't make the company interesting for potential, whatever it might be, piece down the road. We've got to make sure we are extremely diligent and structured in a way which we execute. So obviously it's my job today to deal with people's reaction to the first half. People have their opinions on it, and that is absolutely fine. That's the joy of opinions. But by the end of the year, we'll see who was right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking at the volume here. It's exceeding average daily volume, only just started trading. And most of them seem to be, well, obviously only indicative, but most of them seem to be buys. So there's a lot of people out there that have faith in BidStack. And of course, I keep saying to people, gaming and advertising, both two massive areas, and you've brought those two together. And, so the potential is massive, isn't it?
It is. Nothing's changed. Nothing has changed from what I've said before. We're still building out BidStack to become the de facto ad network. Now, network's a bit of a dirty word in media, but we're looking to build ourselves to be the biggest ad network for brand activation within the world of video games. If you want to go and hit, target a gamer, you come through us. So that's precisely what our goal is internally, and everything we've done in the first half of the year was absolutely building towards that end goal. And we are extremely comfortable with where the company is sitting in there, and the sector we've moved into. Probably the best decision I've made in my career was to move the company into the world of video games. We are now so well knitted into it, and the likes of our supply side, like John Coronaus and Jamie Negri, and utilizing our incredible advisors like Will Kassoy and John Epstein. It's we are so knitted into the tapestry of the gaming space now, mm-hmm. that we are very, very well positioned. So remarkably comfortable.
Yeah. And last one before I ask you the three reasons, as always. But where do you hope to see this company, James, in say 3 to 5 years?
That's a good question, isn't it? It's the company's, in terms of its potential, it has got, there's no limit you can put on it. It has got an enormous potential. I think if you look at the likes of some of the valuations out there on the likes of the Trade Desk, for example, there are opportunities for us to grow into a scale of that size. Now, we'll see what happens. We know what, and I won't go into it now because I'm sure people are digesting every word I say and working out whether or not I'm confident enough on the end of year. Yes, I am. The piece that I would love to go through in more detail is the change in which the likes of the advertising standards and the restrictions on what data is allowed to be shared back to ad agencies. Basically, like government pushing through to try and sort of stop elements of tracking going through way beyond GDPR, which actually all plays into our hands. So these huge budgets that have been pumped through the likes of Facebook and Google will have to go potentially, not, it won't all be going the same direction as it has been potentially in the not too distant future. We know what's going on with that. That's very exciting. It all plays into our hands. So yeah, all really good here, Justin. I think we could be as big as we want to be, but it's one of those things where I'd say this, my job is to protect all of the investors, obviously, to protect the staff, and it's to try and navigate this through the noise. There's going to be a lot of noise today, and I completely understand that. That's what I'm paid for. I get it. But it's guiding this company to the point of where it's in a really strong position for someone on the West Coast who, let's imagine that we know those guys well, looking at us and going, do you know what? That is bloody interesting. I want to go and investigate potentially gobbling that thing up and giving a great return for investors. So there's things like that we could do.
Marvellous stuff. Go on then, James. If someone sees a drop today in the price and thinks, oh, hang on, and listen to the podcast and is on the edge of hitting that follow button, give them three quick reasons why they should add you to their watch list, please.
Well, it'll be a bargain price today from the look of it. On top of that, I would say that the way the company is set up, and I'd hope people would read what I've written in my statement, the way in which we have set the company up in the first half of the year is going to benefit everyone who's in the boat from an investment point of view going forward. We are very, very comfortable as well, as a third point, about the way in which the end of year will look and beyond. So we're extremely comfortable, and yeah, it's all looking rather rosy internally.
Marvellous stuff, James. Good to chat to you, and no doubt we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Ciclatera, chairman of Live Company Group. LVCG is the ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
Now, you've released your half-yearly results for the 6 months ending the 30th of June. And I always point out that, results are a good guide, but they are historical. I mean, they're now 3 months out of date. In fact, the closing date was 3 months out of date. So a lot is going on. I know you've done a lot since that because you've been on the podcast. So while it's worth going through them, we'll also chat about hopefully what's coming up. So give us some highlights, David, if you could, from the results.
I think you're absolutely right, because we're sitting where today is the 30th of September. As the interims show, we are basically with contracts at 0.2 million pounds worth of revenue this year, which is pretty much, give or take, 50,000-60,000 pounds what we achieved for the whole of last year. We are 79% of our revenue booked, and that's before we get into the very, very busy season of the last quarter, which includes the NEC, with obviously significant revenues coming in there. So I think it's as you said, historically, we're that was 3 months ago. We're absolutely on track to meet the our expected results, and so in line with expectations. I think that's the word that we've used. It's been a very interesting period since then as well. We signed, obviously, a deal with Nickelodeon. You'll see there's a reference to a new zoo that was signed in America. I'm very, very keen on the zoos in America, because we're basically we've just appointed an agency called Imagination, and I believe we'll be seeing a lot from them in the near future. But this is about the last one we signed on our own account, the John Ball Zoo in Michigan. I think the other interesting thing is that we although it's not finalized, the indications and discussions are with the three ex-shareholders of Brightbricks that they have decided to take shares in the company rather than cash, which they're deferred shareholders. So that's an optimistic view by them. They obviously still remain in the company. So everybody believes in where we're going, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's pretty much getting busier. And is that going to continue?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I've spent my summer. I mean, I look at partnerships too. Obviously, the recent partnership we have with Imagination was an example of working with complementary companies. But we aren't everywhere in the world, and we've built up our geographical partnerships over this year, beginning of the year in Germany and places like that. We've got 2, 3, 4 different locations we are basically working on with geographical partnerships. We obviously are very excited about our new, what I call the IP division, with obviously the opportunity to take the Nickelodeon deal that's basically there just for the UK beyond what we hope to be able to do more than that. So there, we've obviously announced the deal we did with Penguin, and I think it's fair to say that when you look at the sort of brands that we're working with now, other brands are approaching us. So I'm excited in those two areas. So I think Q4 is going to be a really, I know it's going to be even busier than the Q3 we've just been through. And I think the other thing that's important is the company's trading has been since Q2 profitably. And obviously that's obviously for a startup business what you want to hear and see.
Yeah, so you said since you sort of dropped out there, since Q2, you're saying, yes, profitably?
Yeah, it's all actually in the statement there. Since Q2, the company has been trading profitably, and obviously that's what you want to see in a startup business.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, David.
And the other thing else I'd like to mention, there's been one always tries to listen to shareholders. You can't listen to everything everybody says all the time, but as a new company, we've strengthened our compliance. We've we've hired Stranders, our Nomad, who are great people. We've just announced a new non-executive who basically absolutely comes from the city. I think will add great benefit to an existingly strong board. That's kind of we're strengthening in all departments.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's have those three reasons, David. If someone's listening right now and they're not, they haven't added you to their watch list, give them those three reasons why they should add you to their watch list, please.
Well, as I've always said, we own our own brand. So in spite of the fact we're now building relationships with international brand, Brit Live is our brand. Our zoos, our whatever, around the world. So that's we're an owner of a strong content owner. Secondly, the geography of where we are. We are in a lot of different countries, and I should say that we, as you can see as well, we've announced that we've gone beyond the 60 events. We've announced in today's interims we've hit 63. Clearly, we're going to be working beyond that before the year end. So our global presence is growing. And I think the third thing is, which I always say, is management have skin in the game. I mean, I'm a reasonably large shareholder, and obviously people are very option oriented, and they're working towards their options being something. So management are all part of this business.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. David, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future.
Oh, I think it'll be not too distant. Okay, thank you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Knott, Chief Executive Officer of Savannah Petroleum. SAVP is a ticker. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin.
Now, it's been quite a sort of, transformational year. Now, that phrase is used a lot, but in your case, it's true. The first half of 2019. And results are always, historical, so it's always nice to look back. But what's more important, I suppose, is what's going to happen. But first of all, Andrew, I mean, as always, if someone is listening right now, not quite sure what you're all about, just give them a brief summary as to what Savannah Petroleum is all about, please, before we get into the reels.
Yeah, okay, no problem. So we're a West African-focused oil and gas company. We're listed on AIM. We have a very strong institutionally orientated shareholder register, which includes some of the largest financial institutions in the world. And we really, we're active in two countries, Niger and Nigeria. In Niger, we have a very large land position, which is half, covers half the main petroleum basin. We have over 100 plus structures that we want to drill. We've drilled five and we made five discoveries from that. So that's all about capital growth and then turning those discoveries into production and ultimately cash flow. And the good news is there's been a lot of progress on infrastructure, with a lot of infrastructure having been built to enable us to monetize those discoveries, hopefully in a relatively quick format.
Yeah. Okay.
Then in Nigeria, we're in the final stages of what we expect to be the acquisition of Seven Energy, gas assets in the southeast of the country. Those assets are highly cash flow generative. They're largely ex-CapEx. And so what we will have in aggregate when that transaction closes is a business which is highly cash flow generative and has a very strong and attractive exploration business and development business in Niger. And that's sort of that's Savannah in a nutshell, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you've achieved a lot this, you know, this first half there, like you were saying there. And if you could, Andrew, I mean, you know, what are you looking to achieve in the next 6 months, do you think?
Okay, so in the next 6 months as a business, we expect to close off the Seven Energy transaction. Mm-hmm. We would hope to be in a position where we are, commenced the work on our early production system in Niger, and then following that, we would then expect that we will start drilling activity to further exploration drilling activity in country. And then in Nigeria, I would hope that having completed the transaction, we've linked up new customers to the Accugas business and are increasing our expected cash flow generation in that business as a result. I also expect us to have de-geared, to begin the process of de-gearing the balance sheet, and having paid off a significant amount of started the process of paying off a significant amount of debt. So that's, in a nutshell, those are the sorts of things that we expect. So in Niger, it's around delivering first oil from the early production system. It's around starting drilling again, and possibly with the introduction of a new partner. And then in Nigeria, it's around stabilizing the existing business and starting to grow, moving onto a growth path.
Mm-hmm. And for people listening right now, are there any kind of, you know, financials and figures you can throw around the kind of production targets you're hoping to achieve?
Yeah, so I mean, for those people that are new to the story, if they look at our annual report and my CEO letter, which is pages 7 through to 9, you'll see a summary of the contracted cash flow generation that we expect from the business, from the businesses that we're acquiring, and you'll see that ranges from low hundreds to high to just approximately $175 million per annum over the period 2019 to 2022. So there's quite significant cash flow generation anticipated at the asset level from the assets that we're acquiring. And then in terms of to understand the Niger business, and that's pre the signature of new contracts, from the Niger business perspective, indicatively we estimate it costs about $1 a barrel to discover oil in Niger, and that the NPV is somewhere between $4 and $6 a barrel. So you can see that is a good business. If it costs you $1 to find something and the value you can realize is a multiple of that, then clearly that's a good business as well. So that is those are the sorts of the principal numbers that we would ask people to focus upon.
Yeah. And how do you feel on a personal level, Andrew? It's going, you know, over the last 6 months, and, you know, looking forward, how confident are you?
Well, look, I think the answer is very, and I think that if you look at the progress that we've made, we got the government approval. We believe we're the first company to get a presidential approval following the re-election of the current administration in Nigeria, which I think also demonstrates the strength of relationships that we have in country and the goodwill towards us in the transaction that exists in country. And and then in terms of the go forward path, we should shortly close off the remaining CPs, which are largely procedural, and you'll see the news flow around that shortly, I would expect. And then obviously we're moving forward into the new world with the Seven and the Niger business combined. And that, as I've already said, I'm highly confident about what the future offers there. I think there'll be a lot of opportunities for the combined business to add to create significant value. In the period in between, the strong position that we're in is that the liquidity that we'll have, the liquidity required to get us from here to close, I anticipate is a relatively straightforward to finance through incremental loan notes as required, which is what we've previously said. I said that at the AGM. So I don't see any significant barriers now for us to be able to get this transaction closed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, Andrew, in summary, if someone likes the sound of the progress you're making here but are not yet following the story, just give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
So, like, I think the first one relates to, the three in aggregate are, we have a fundamentally very good business in Niger, we have a fundamentally very good business in Nigeria, and the third is that both of them we expect to be able to deliver material news on how we're going to grow those businesses over the course of the next couple of weeks, couple of months, year. There's going to be a lot of news flow that comes out of the business now. We're just in that position where we are going to have a lot of news flow. So in terms of the first point, as I said, we have a basin which is highly prolific. Over 75% of all wells have discovered oil, commercial oil, we believe commercial oil. In the basin full stop, which is a very high success rate. There's good geological reasons for that. There's lots of information that we've published about this in the past about why that is the case. But fundamentally, it's technically low risk. There's a large opportunity set, and the crude that we find, we believe, is very valuable. So that's the Niger business. And then in Nigeria, we believe we've got something. We have a business which is underutilized today, i.e. there's a lot of spare capacity in the infrastructure we're acquiring. We believe we're in a very strong growth market, i.e. power, in a country which is growing very, very strongly and coming off a relatively low base. And the contracted cash flow generation that we have is forecast to be very robust. So you have those two businesses. One has the potential to find a lot of oil, and we expect people to get it on stream quickly. One is already in production for a significant volume of gas, and we expect to be able to grow that significantly by adding new customers and new upstream gas volume. And then the third point is just, there'll be a lot of news about this. There'll be a lot of news about closing the transaction in the coming weeks. There'll be a lot of news around what we're going to do in Niger going forward. And there'll be a lot of news around how we're going to grow the business, the Nigerian cash flows. So net-net, I think we've got a very sensible business mix. I think we have a very strong management team, and we're in a sweet spot where both businesses, I expect, will be able to deliver very significant growth over the coming months and years.
Marvellous stuff. Andrew, good to chat to you. And like you say, lots happening, so no doubt we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Executive Director at Europa Metals. EUZ is the ticker there. Lawrence, thanks for joining me.
Thanks. Afternoon, Justin.
Now, you've got the equity fundraising to raise £1 million and issue of warrants, and we'll dig into what all that's about. But as always, quick summary. If someone's tuning in for the first time, never heard of Europa Metals, can you summarise what the business is about, please, Lawrence?
It's a significant lead-zinc silver resource in northwest Spain, in Castilla and León, an area of Spain which has a strong history of mining, very supportive of mining, and we have a scoping study which we hope to turn into a mine development plan, which basically shows a highly economically robust lead zinc silver mine, which could be got into production with relatively low capex with a good operating margin, which despite the fact that lead zinc and silver, the prices are doing fantastically at the moment, although they do tend to oscillate. Because they oscillate, we've got a robust project, so you're insulated against that. And we're very happy about where we're located, with lots and lots of infrastructure around us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's dig into the fundraise. There's quite a few angry people on social media saying, why such a big discount? What is happening here? So why? Why the discount, Lawrence?
Well, we've had discussions through the brokers with investors. Yes, the share price has been high recently, but it's also been very low in very recent months as well. So I think a certain amount of new investors coming into the placing. We're looking at the average price. And also, money is difficult out there for junior mining stocks. There's no doubt about that. It's extremely tough markets. So we took a long, hard look at this placing and the price that kept coming back to us. And we made a decision that actually we could secure a price well above the last raising. And it makes sure that the company is funded going forward so we can deliver more important work, because, of course, we've finished the on-the-ground operational work and now we're awaiting the results from that for the JORC 2012 report. We hope to have back soon. And also the quite important metallurgical or initial metallurgical testing done at Wardell Armstrong to tell us about concentrate products we can sell and what that means for the flow sheet of the company. Mm-hmm. Sorry, of the project, of the mining project.
Yes. So, so you're not just drilling here for the sake of drilling. You are getting things done. You're focused here.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just about drilling. I think that's the important thing here, Justin. So let's deal with the drilling first. Drilling for drilling's sake is completely pointless. And in actual fact, we haven't done a lot of drilling to get to where we are, because, of course, we've piggybacked and done lots of different types of work, which has given us a JORC inferred resource and hopefully very shortly an indicated resource by, you know, looking at gaps in the resource and just being able to limit what we're doing. So, yes, we do want to do some more drilling for indicated. Why? Because it gives more surety on the project, more surety on the resource, and gives a greater sense of safety for anybody who might want to put money into this or acquire the project, as to the fact that what we're saying really is in the ground, all done to JORC standards. We have, however, held, if you like, an option over, but we've said as part of this placing that what we also reserve the right to do is potentially drill into some new areas. So if we decide to, there's a lot of internal data that we're processing at the moment from the drilling campaign outside of just the assay numbers. So there may be a possibility that we look at new mineralization along strike and new mineralization at depth. And we're going to think very, very carefully before we start drilling any of that. But we think there are scenarios where the benefit could significantly outweigh the cost of doing a limited amount of work outside of the resource. But leaving all that to one side, Justin, what we're also doing in earnest is now seriously flicking the switch on some important engineering work. So geotechnical work, hydrogeological, lots of the work that in effect take the concept of the scoping study and starts turning it into a real mine plan. And this is for two reasons. One, again, it de-risks the project in terms of, is it going to work? if you actually start mining, is it going to produce what it says it produces? Allows people to look into our project alongside that MET sample and get a much greater feeling of security over what the project is. But also as important, I think, is that the work we'll be doing on the engineering side ticks some very important boxes to allow us to submit a full mining development submission next year to the Junta of Castilla and León to get a mine development license. So those are the sort of the two stratas of what we're doing here, Justin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see. And give us a timeline then, Lawrence, of events here, if you could. What, next 3-6 months, what are you hoping to achieve?
I think we'll update that. I think the next 3 to 6 months, effectively, we'll probably resume with some limited drilling, but I imagine that will be around looking at more indicated until we get, I'm hesitant, Justin, because until we get the new JORC findings back, that's when we'll start announcing detail on that. But certainly I think we're going to be having a look. I hope we get our first indicated coming up from the new JORC update, but we'll build the indicated part of the mine plan around those results. And then you'll also see us beginning some geotechnical drilling as well, which isn't like deep, expensive, you know, 750, 400, 500 meter drill holes. It's drill holes to look at a whole load of parameters to do with water usage, etc., and suitability of surfaces. And we'll start working on the engineering.
Marvellous stuff. Okay. As always, Lawrence, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're talking about here, but not yet following the story, give them the three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
You've got a defined lead, zinc, silver resource. Those metals are doing very well at the moment, and we're in a region which I say is one of the most politically stable, Castilla y León in Spain, for mining projects in areas where, in a world where domiciles for mining projects politically are just getting harder and harder and harder, and we're surrounded by infrastructure, and in the general scheme of mining, it's a cheap mine to build, we think, according to the scope of study, it's a cheap mine to operate, and those are the projects which are actually being delivered at present. And as of today, we've delivered operationally on just about everything we've said we would as a company. We've done a lot with a very limited amount of cash, and we've today secured £1 million at a price above our last placing, which we're going to go out and start work for a mine, full mine development license submission, and to work on more security as well as more potential exploration within our license area, focused and delivery.
More of the stuff. Lawrence, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Bagheer Group, up 15.3% today, 2.75. At four, Sirius Minerals, up 31% on the bounce there at 3.8 pence. At three, Vast Resources, up another 20% today to 0.26 pence. At two, Feedback, up 21% to 1.4%. And Metrobank, up 2.2% to 196. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it's Annual Financial Report from Vast Resources. At four, Harvest Minerals, superior results in coffee trials. At three, Jangada Mines, technical report on Pitomibilis Vanadium Project. At two, Kora Gold, gold mineralization confirmed at Zone B North. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Bidstack Group, BIDS, of course, James was on the podcast today. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.